Welcome back here in the huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. It's been a full show already with the John Farrell news. It's going to continue with the John Farrell news after. But we got to take a break from baseball talk to go on to the TikTok Jewelers guest line and find ourselves our ESPN NFL insider. It's our friend Field Yates who joins us every week at this time. Thanks to our friends at Supreme Lending in Essex Junction, specializing in VA loans and first-time homebuyers. See if you qualify for a loan with no money down online at ownyourhomevt.com. Field, how are you?
Doing great. Thanks so much for having me on. I can't believe that we are already into week six. I think I might open up my interview every week by saying, I can't believe we are already on to week blank. But I mean it every time.
Field, before we get to Tom Brady's injury, the Patriots, Jets, the Giants, and all their issues, I do want to ask you, because you're a Boston guy, the Red Sox fire John Farrell, back-to-back 93-win seasons, he's got a world championship. Do you remember a situation where a guy so accomplished was fired in the NFL? I think Jim Harbaugh, I think Marty Schottenheimer.
Yeah, I'd say Jim Harbaugh, Marty Schottenheimer come to mind. Tom Coughlin, I don't believe, was technically fired by the New York Giants. I think it was categorized as either resignation or parting of ways. But obviously that was one where it felt like a coach with great credentials, was not pushed out the door, but it felt like it was time on both sides. You know, Andy Reid leaving Philadelphia, also one where it was not a matter of the track record. It was a matter of whether it was time to just get a fresh set of eyes and a fresh voice injected into the organization. Obviously, Tom Coughlin's done a nice job helping to build this Jaguars franchise in his first year officially on the job. And then also Andy Reid's done an amazing job in Kansas City. So I would say this. I don't disagree with the sentiment behind the Red Sox decision surrounding John Farrell. At the same time, I don't think that John Farrell did not do a fine job as the manager for the Boston Red Sox. Ultimately, you know, a World Series and back-to-back division titles for the first time since, I believe, 1915. That right there speaks for itself.
And you talk about all the guys you just listed. A lot of those franchises that got rid of those coaches, they either got worse right after, and some of them still haven't recovered. I mean, the Giants would kill for what Tom Coughlin did right now. And the Eagles, it took a while before, you know, they recovered from getting rid of Andy Reid. The grass isn't always greener, Field.
The grass is not always greener. Obviously, you know, I can tell you this, and I'd imagine some people, you know, in the Burlington area felt the same way, but many in Boston wanted John Farrell to be removed as the Red Sox manager. Some uninspiring in-game management from him, some at times curious decision-making. But, you know, I think until we decide, it's hard for us to really assess the outlook for this franchise until they have a new manager that is actually hired. Not that anybody cares about my opinion, but Alex Cora, former colleague of mine, at ESPN and a former Red Sox briefly, would be a name that immediately comes to mind to me as a marvelous fit. Alex is a great baseball man, so I'd love to see him at least get some consideration, but we will cross that bridge when we come to it.
Field, let's go to the NFL. Roger Goodell sends the letter out yesterday saying he wishes everyone would stand for the anthem and the player, you know, he'll work with the players in other ways to get their message out. This feels like a business decision to me. This feels like ratings might be down, sponsorships might be down, et cetera, et cetera, and Roger Goodell's trying to protect the business. How did you read it?
You know, what's funny to me is, and the word is not funny, it's perhaps just disheartening to me, is that the person who has become sort of the lightning rod in the kneeling of anthems, during anthems, is Colin Kaepernick, obviously. He is the person that has faced the most animosity and strife for his decision. And yet, Colin Kaepernick is the individual who has been the most consistent with his message since the outset. He is opposing racial injustice and racial oppression. That is what Colin Kaepernick is kneeling, and that is what he is boycotting. He, you know, the inequality that people face in this country based off factors including the race. That has been clear from the beginning. And yet we have, you know, listen, the NFL goes from having owners sort of championing the cause of kneeling prior to the anthem to all of a sudden, you know, Jerry Jones is now saying that the Cowboys players will not be able to play if they kneel for the anthem. And not that the Cowboys knelt in unison for the anthem previously, but they did kneel prior to the anthem. So I think that there's been a lot of mixed messaging going on right now. And that part is it's hard to figure out sometimes. So is it a business decision by Roger Goodell? I think you can make the case for that. It's a sort of multi-layered conversation at the very least, and one that pretty much every time I wrap up a conversation about it, I say it will not go away anytime soon.
Field Yates, our ESPN NFL insider, thanks to Supreme Lending in Essex Junction. OwnYourHomeVT.com right here on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN. Let's move to the Patriots. Tom Brady's shoulder, we know, missed practice yesterday. Left AC joint sprain. How serious is it? What's the risk going forward?
Yeah, I think this is one that, I mean, anytime it's a quarterback injury, it's hard to say that it's minor. It's the non-throwing shoulder for Tom Brady. I think that there are some indications you can receive, though, specific to this week. You know, the team has not added a quarterback to its roster, practice squad or active roster. As a matter of fact, over the weekend, they cut Taylor Heinicke, their practice squad quarterback, which probably tells you what you need to know surrounding Tom Brady's availability. Does that mean that it's not going to be an issue going forward? No, because what it really underscores is an issue the Patriots have had in terms of protecting Tom Brady, which is not good. I mean, they have struggled to protect Tom Brady to this point. He's taking too many hits, and I think they all have recognized that. So I'm not saying it's an issue that needs to be ignored, but what I am saying is if you are wondering whether or not Tom Brady will be out there on Sunday against the Jets, I think the answers are pretty clear. Yes, he will be.
I think we talked last week about the Patriots. Do they need to change up their play calling to protect Brady? Now that we know he's susceptible to injury on that shoulder, do you think this is the game where they run it 32 times or the game where they do get back to the, you know, one step back and the ball comes out?
Yeah, they might have some alterations. You might see some alterations in the offense. I think also what we've heard from Patriots players, and, you know, I'm not saying the Patriots players are going to be, you know, sort of dishing out house secrets or anything, but I think if you pay close attention to what they're saying, you can sort of glean what coaches' messages have been throughout the week. And it's pretty clear that they seem to do a better job protecting Tom Brady. Like, it's not so much a schematic issue as it is an execution issue right now. And let's not take the coaches off the hook and put this all on the players. Same time, I think the players would even concede, like, hey, you know, we have some plays dialed up that can be successful. So it's sort of incumbent upon the coaches first to adjust the offense as they see needed, and also the players to play better. And I think that's, you know, it sounds harsh when a team is coming off a win, but the reality is, like, if you're content with your play or your coaching in the NFL, that's where you find yourself starting to lose games consistently. The Patriots on the opposite side of that coin.
Field, I really want to talk about the Giants right now. I made this point yesterday, and I think it's really unfortunate to have to look at it this way, but I think the Odell Beckham Jr. injury ends up actually being a good thing for them in the long run. They end up, they're probably terrible this season. Maybe they get the number one pick in the draft and they use it. Maybe they trade the number one pick and move back and get more picks. Maybe it forces regime change if the team is really bad. And now they probably get leverage and contract negotiations with him going forward. Am I right? Like, it feels sadistic to look at it that way, but I think it's probably true.
I was going to say, a lot of tentacles right there that we're sort of going towards or going down. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, it's hard for me to say because I am personally not of the mind that losing consistently helps a franchise and, you know, provide steps forward. Now, there have been some teams that have struggled through some difficult years and come out better on the end. You know, the most obvious example is what the Colts had for one season where they ended up with Andrew Luck after, you know, 1 year of turmoil, just winning two games. Now, the counterpoint to that is that Andrew Luck hasn't been enough to resurrect that Colts franchise. Like, ultimately, you need to have the right people in charge, both from the coaching and from the front office standpoint. And I think ultimately that will decide where this Giants franchise goes going forward. Is Jerry Reese the right man for the general manager job? Is Ben McAdoo the right man for the head coaching job? And I'm not answering that question myself. I think that those are the questions that are going to be asked, though. And certainly when you are under fire, when you are 0-5, a lot of football left to be played. Could they dig themselves out of this hole and eventually win four or five games and maybe pick closer to 10 than one? Yeah, it's possible, but for a team that was 11-5 last year and a darn good defense, all of a sudden we got a lot of question marks surrounding this Giants franchise.
Fields, should they rebuild or reload in 2018? Because they do have veterans under big contracts, and it seems like, you know, with good health and good fortune, maybe they are in a position to win again next year.
Yeah, it sort of depends where things shake out. Like, you know, I'm not sure you can reload or rebuild the offensive line in just one off season, but, you know, staring ahead to 2018, which is a bit of a fool's errand in just week six of the regular season of 2017, but the offensive line certainly needs to be a top priority this offseason. You know, the wide receiver group could potentially be addressed. You've got Odell Beckham Jr., you've got Sterling Shepard. What's next beyond that, especially for a team that, you know, at least going into this year was so reliant upon three wide receiver sets? And then do you have a keeper in the backfield? That is a question. Is there a bell cow back that you feel comfortable handing the football off to, or at least allocating 20 touches per game to? So I think the offense is going to be the focal point for this Giants team this offseason. That probably stated in the obvious there. I'm not sure it's either a rebuild or a reload, or I think it's maybe somewhere in between. That's not to cop out, but when you have a quarterback like Eli Manning, it's hard to say that you're necessarily rebuilding. At the same time, reloading is something that I'm not comfortable saying about a team that could finish with, you know, 4-6 wins.
Field Yates of ESPN, thanks to Supreme Lending at Essex Junction with us every Wednesday, 4:35, right here on The Huddle. Field, we'll get to a shortened version of Rapid Fire. The two-point conversion play the other night by the Bears was the coolest play you've ever seen, true or false?
It's close. I mean, I'd say false for this reason. The circumstances around it are not significant enough for me to feel as though the magnitude of the play is the coolest I've ever seen. Off the top of my head, the coolest two-point conversion I think I've ever seen was the Boise State Statue of Liberty.
Oh, yes.
I believe it was Ian Johnson who won the game for the for Boise State against Oklahoma in a bowl game probably, what, 8 or 9 years ago?
Yeah.
But I tell you what, it was fun. It was backyard football. I bet there are a couple other coaches around the NFL that are going to be saying to themselves this week, yeah, let's fire that one into the playbook and see if we can't dial it up at the right time.
Thursday night football usually gives us a matchup that leaves something to be desired, but Panthers-Eagles this week looks like a good one. What are you thinking?
Yeah, critical one here. I think the Eagles have, they're really a compelling team. I would think, because they're playing at home, the Carolina Panthers have the edge. Cam Newton has been terrific over the past two games. But two teams that I think are not just going to be there right now, but are going to be there towards the end of the season when it comes to the NFC playoff picture. So very much looking forward to this game.
Field, the Falcons bye week and multiple injuries gave my fantasy team its first loss, so we're sitting at 4-1. And I got to ask you, because a lot of people want to know too, Travis Kelce, Sterling Shepard, can I comfortably reinsert them into my lineup this week? What do we think?
I think it's too early to tell, obviously. You know, he's got an ankle injury for Sterling Shepard, who I would make contingency plans there. And then Travis Kelce, we just don't know. You know, it's a concussion. It's, you know, a process that obviously involves, clearing the independent consultants or independent exam. Too early to say. Obviously, you know, two players that Shepard, now he's, you know, probably going to be thrust into a number one wide receiver role when healthy. And then Travis Kelce, I mean, outside of Gronk, what other tight end would you want? You know, probably just Zach Ertz and then Travis Kelce. That's the short list of top tight ends in the NFL, but we'll see.
Field Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, with us every Wednesday, 4:35. Thanks to Supreme Lending and Essex Junction. Field, thanks as always. We'll talk to you again next week.
All righty. Thanks, bud.